the Guelph Griffins traded Ryan Sheehan back to the Calgary Dinos for, I don't know, a 2026 first round pick and a Stone Road Mall gift certificate or something. I don't know. Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics because it's just been too dang long and the coaching carousel across U Sports football has been going off the rails. So we had to jump back on to talk about a few things going on, but not just because it's how I open all the shows, Tom, but also because it's been so long since I've seen your beautiful face and heard your beautiful voice, as have all our lovely fans out there. Tom, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing so damn well. It is so nice to be back and seeing you. I was definitely having a bit of withdrawal, not seeing you on a bi-weekly basis here, my friend. But my God, it's good to be back talking football. And yeah, you're right. There's been so much stuff going on here, especially from the coaching side of things. We had to hop back on and just get to talking about it.
Yeah, you know, going back to our car ride, coming back from Kingston and the Vanier, we probably anticipated getting on a pod around this time to set up some of our off-season content, do a little like holiday New Year's content, which we still plan on doing. But then with all this coming up, yeah, it kind of took precedent. And so we want to get some of our thoughts out because, golly, from word I've been getting from Tom, who does the Lord's work in keeping tabs on all our social media posts, y'all are certainly very intrigued by everything going on. So if it's of note to you, it's certainly of note to us and worth covering. You know, Tom, I guess I'll start with this. I mean, we'll run through all the kind of major teams that we kind of are going to speak on. And I'll say off the jump, a lot of this is conjecture, right? You know, I have kind of names of dudes that, like, you know, could be worth, like, that I'm kind of curious to feed you and just see how you react. I'm sure you have some similar ideas and everything like this. I'll start like this, though. Of all the days that I wish that, I shouldn't say wish because for all intents and purposes, I could put up the video, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I'll stick with saying wish I was putting up a video. It's this one, Tom, because as you can see, but our listeners are only going to have to imagine, I am sitting here donning what is ultimately my father's Griffin jersey, but with my name and number on the back and my Guelph Griffin snapback cap. I don't mean to put too fine a point on it, my friends. You know, they're my Griffins again. They're my Griffins again.
Oh yeah, I knew I'd be seeing the Guelph colors back in full force after the recent changes here. How excited are you just to be repping the colors again?
It feels good. It feels good. Obviously we're going to talk about the coaching changes that have happened at Guelph. And I've been somewhat off my alma mater for a few years, and it's almost entirely had to do with, you know, not overly digging, you know, the job Ryan Sheehan had done there. And there's a lot that goes into that. You know, I won't go into too much detail of it. A lot of those things have been expressed by other people who have reached out to us that you've kind of relayed to me through social media in the wake of this. And of course, I guess we'll start right there with the coaching swap or trade, if you will. The Guelph Griffins traded Ryan Sheehan back to the Calgary Dinos for, I don't know, a 2026 first round pick and a Stone Road Mall gift certificate or something. I don't know. It's a weird, you know, kind of situation going on there. Of course, Queens is still very prevalent at Guelph, with his former teammate, taking over at the helm. And of course, with his dad still being there as well. Like, what do we know right now? Let's start with the Guelph situation. What do we know? And what do we think as far as who is where and what spots are still vacant?
So, diving into this a little bit here, from what we know for sure, obviously, Coach Sheehan is back with the Calgary Dinos as their seventh head coach in program history. Mark Soria has taken over for the Guelph Griffins here, so he's moving from his offensive coordinator position to head coach. Most likely, they're going to be looking for an offensive coordinator as well. I can't remember if we talked about it at all, if there was some speculation about it. Last week, or a couple weeks ago, I had the pleasure of calling the Hamilton Steel City Bowl for Cable 14, play-by-play for them. It was an awesome game. Hamilton's best and brightest out there, and you could tell, even though it was a pretty rainy and cold day, there was a bunch of scouts that were there because the football in Hamilton, let me tell you, is alive and well. And I might be a little biased there because it's my hometown currently. But anyways, through there, we heard some rumblings. There was some things kind of happening. We weren't really sure. And I got a chance to bump into a coach, Dennis McPhee, and see him again and just say hi. And so nice to see the man. I love the guy dearly. Donning the St. Mary's Husky gear and recruiting for the St. Mary's Huskies. So, safe to say, he is no longer with the Guelph Griffins anymore. We had seen that he had been let go from their organization a little while ago, and I think let go might be the wrong words to say, rather than he chose to leave for another opportunity and living out east. But regardless, he is now with the St. Mary's Huskies. There has not been an official announcement, but based on everything that we saw from this past year, Donovan Carter is definitely going to be the defensive coordinator for them. They were in that standard 3-4 defense that DC is known for, and those players love that man. So I would imagine that going into it so far, we have confirmed Mark Soria as the head coach, Donovan Carter as the defensive coordinator, looking for that offensive coordinator, certainly. No word yet on how the Cheyenne relation, the Cheyenne connection is affected here, because while the offensive line coach is certainly Cheyenne's father, there was a receiver coach in there that was Devin Cheyenne as well. So it was a whole family meeting there with the Guelph Griffins. So I don't know how that's going to be affected. We don't have those details yet, but that's everything that we know for sure with Guelph.
So possibly needing an O-line coach and receiver coach as well. But with those moves that you're mentioning of moving Saria to head coach, obviously leaving the OC spot vacant, and then having DC take over at DC, Donovan Carter taking over at defensive coordinator, he was also calling up specials for them last year, right? So it's still, that still leaves a spot to be filled. I believe it was also at that weekend you ran into another, a former teammate of mine who's also been doing a little bit in the coaching, working the coaching circuit a bit over these years, in Charlie Taggart, which then brings to mind, we were messaging about this, how I forget if it was last year or the year before, but Guelph brought in another former teammate of ours, Alex Charette, to, I think, work with receivers or help out on specials and everything like that. So a guy who's, one of the greats from that Stu Lang era, had a stint in the CFL, back helping out there. I think he's doing some strength coordinating stuff. So you could imagine, just like many programs would probably want to, and I'm not saying this knowing anything, but just thinking of like, well, if I was an athletic director, if I'm running a program, if I have a guy who went through our program, was a major success, and part of one of the most recent success our team has had, yeah, I want to see him become part of this new program. So I'm going to be interested to see if he's elevated in any way in some capacity, just because, hey, A, I'd love that for him, and B, I think I'd love that for the program as well. When we were in Kingston, I joked with Steve Snyder, head coach there, on how, of course, UBC being in the house for that Vanier Cup against Montreal. Another former teammate of mine who's made quite a name for himself in coaching, Matt Nesbitt, wasn't in the house. Now, he was certainly someone, because if we go back over his track record, just starting to think about some of the young coaches that are out and around, out and about in sort of the U Sports circuit and the OUA teams, to be specific. He's someone where he assisted at Guelph after, well, he worked with the Argos for a few years, or 1 year after finishing up at Guelph, came back to Guelph to help out coaching, was the offensive coordinator for Joe DeMore out in Windsor, before then landing as the offensive line coach and recruiting coordinator in Queens. He was on the recruiting trail, I believe, when we were in Kingston for that weekend. So another name that, with some of the vacancies, and we'll get into some of the others, that I'll be interested in seeing. Another name, though, I want to throw out at you, because I think you might be more familiar with him than I am, is someone who's been wearing some, who I believe changed shades of purple, because I believe he did his playing with Laurier, but he was rocking some Western purple this year, and one Jackson Yonkis, who's of course made quite the name for himself as coaching with the Cambridge Lions program. I think he was coaching with the H-backs for Western, and obviously if you watch their offense, like the H-back is perhaps the most vaunted position, you know, is part of that offensive line in sort of sparking really all things they do offensively. So those are just a couple of names I kind of had on the tip of my tongue. I don't know how you react to those or what other names you're thinking about in terms of some of these vacancies or just who might be a right fit, not only thinking about Guelph, but thinking about how this Queens connection really is still fairly strong at Guelph with Saria at the helm.
Certainly. I think that no matter what, I think there's a specific reason why Guelph has not posted about their offensive coordinator. I think Saria's got his guys in mind, very similar to how Cheyenne did as well, thinking about current Guelph players or current Guelph alumni, I should say, going back to, you know, his playing days as well. Now, Saria played at Queens, obviously, most notably. It was a part of that 09 Vanier Cup team, but also played some ball at Laurier, has coached at Laurier, has also coached at U of T, Guelph, and now obviously the head man there. So he's obviously had a lot of different connections with a lot of different people from across, whether it's his playing days, whether it's his coaching days. He's got a good sense of who's out there and who's going to be really legit for this kind of offense here. Now, the offense that Guelph ran, at least when I was there and confirmed with our guy Nate Hobbs, was the same Queens offense that Coach Cheyenne had run while he was at Queens, both the Cheyenne father and Coach Ryan Cheyenne. So I'd be interested to see if the offense changes up at all, if they go into a different direction now that Coach Saria is there. I got the feeling that it was very much this is an offense that Ryan Cheyenne had brought over to Guelph, and this is how they were going to run things, and this is what they ran in Calgary and obviously in Queens, and has a hell of a track record. You know, for as much as we want to say, or there's plenty of people who have a lot of things to say about Coach Cheyenne, and we can get into that a little later on here, but he did show a ton of different, well, he had a lot of success.
Quarterbacks?
Oh, sorry. Yes, he showed a lot of quarterbacks. He had a lot of success in Calgary. His teams when he were out there were some of the best in the country. Now he had some of the best players and a couple of Heck Crichton winning quarterbacks out there, but still he showed some promise that was there. I'd be interested to see what direction Coach Saria wants to take this offense, because depending on what he's thinking is also going to exactly tell us who he's going with or who he wants to bring in to go from there. I know first thing that you said, and there's been a couple of comments already, Guelph wants Galloway back. Give us Todd Galloway. That's
Give
what everybody
Todd
is
Todd Galloway. Yes. There's no way he's – there's
no chance. No chance. No way. That man is not leaving Laurier unless he has a head coaching position, because he is damn good at what he does. But I know the Griffin faithful are dreaming to have Coach Galloway back.
Yeah, no, and I think dreaming is unfortunately going to be the extent of me seeing him in Guelph colors again, unless I go through my photos from years past. And I'm so happy for him and everything that him and Coach Falds are building and have built and continue to do in for the Golden Hawks right now out there in Laurier. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, like we were messing with a few people, you know, thinking that, well, is this ultimately like a lateral move for them? And I think because there's so many positions yet to be filled, it's hard to know just quite what the possible upper limit is. But by all accounts, and you mentioned some of the spots that Coach Saria has been in now since his playing days, one of the comments that it seems a lot of people are mentioning is just kind of really being that you know, cliche players coach, like someone that the players are comfortable turning to and have that confidence in and all of that. And, you know, I as an alumnus wasn't the biggest Coach Sheehan fan. Like, I've talked to players and who were part of his teams at Guelph that weren't the biggest fans of him. I mean, you know, could we get our boy out at UBC now, you know, to hop on the pod and maybe talk about his experiences of a former certain quarterback who might have spent some time at Guelph?
Could who's we get now going to be playing against him again?
Yeah. Could we get like a certain defensive tackle that, you know, had some great experience for Guelph before, you know, splitting ties or however they tried to frame it, you know, with the team, or his younger brother who then left the program and went on to be one of the, you know, best running backs in the province? Like, do we, like, so I say all that in saying that, like, the talent has stayed. Like, you mentioned all people talking about, like, oh, he's brought in all these players, or he's been part of teams with all these players, and whether it's been a product of him recruiting or people believing in him and whatever has been the case, there just also happened to be a lot of examples of players who, and I mean, stories I've heard also about, you know, former coaches of mine who might have still been connected with him, who might not have had the best experience being part of his staff. And so I think of all those things, like there's something to removing a negative and getting a positive. So like, I think of Saria can not only do that, but then also like swing in the opposite direction. Like, I think that can go a long way, because we've certainly seen the talent at Guelph remain. Obviously injuries has been a big part of their tale of recent years, but you know, so much of that head coaching role really is you know, just that leadership and that belief that you instill in your players. So no doubt I think that this can be a positive impact right away, but obviously seeing where those other positions are filled and you know, when we dive into our more thorough breakdown of the team, like more so the players in our offseason content, and talk about maybe guys that are draft bound or just, you know, NARP bound, retired bound, however you want to frame it. You know, we'll have a sense of just like the direction of the team from that standpoint as well. Anything else we need to discuss on the Guelph front? I mean, we have some other teams as well that are very interesting as well.
Certainly. I think I want to obviously be respectful here as best I can. We got some comments about how happy certain people are that Coach Shan is no longer with the Guelph Griffins here. I don't know if I should get into exactly what they said. Obviously, I'm never going to reveal who said what. But stuff like Guelph alumni will be happy to see him gone. Great, they can have him. Bring back Todd Galloway and let's get this thing rolling. Obviously, he was not planning on staying long term. A couple of comments. What seems to be the most popular, F it up and dip, seems to be his mentality. Like, I was really shocked at how much people were looking for this. But once again, you and I had been talking about it and we had been kind of bringing things up. Guelph has a certain level of expectation. There has to be a level of expectation in terms of how well you're doing, what you're performing like each and every single year. If nothing else, because of the unbelievable facilities that you have and the support that you have surrounding everything else. You know, I know that there's a lot of people who say, oh, there's a lot of hands in the kitchen, or they can be whatever, like this idea with Guelph. But like, what has been built at Guelph, both from a physical standpoint and the facilities that are there, and also the culture that Stu Lang has built within that and getting you back into that Yates Cup winning season and getting Guelph back into that, you know, top tier of the OUA. I think that's still what everybody expects. And now when you look at, okay, who's got a better facility than we do? No one. Who's got a better locker room than us? Queens just recently had something that came in that looks pretty damn good because Stu Lang was directly a part of it. So when you look at all of the different things that are here, and even it, like, yes, there's been a lot of changes here, and there's a lot of people who have a lot of things to say about Coach Shan. When you look at the talent that's on this Guelph team as it is right now, some of the rookies that have been brought in recently, the running backs that they have there, and like, this team, if they can stay healthy, I think is already poised with good direction to get back into the top tier of the OUA. So regardless of how you want to frame this, whether you don't believe in what Coach Shan was doing, whether you acknowledge the fact of how many friggin' injuries they have been dealing with for the past 3 years, which like it's been substantial with all of the stuff that they're doing. And just whether or not they have the right pieces in place from both a coaching standpoint, player standpoint, how they've been dealing with things, whatever, all of that's now gone. And you have Coach Soria who's come in now. Now, Soria has a hell of a pedigree himself as a player, as a coach. He's been a part of some special teams in those Loria years. You know, he was the offensive coordinator that got them back into, you know, the Yates Cup contention there. He was the offensive coordinator during the Clay Sequeira era as well at U of T. So he's got some history himself in that regard. Now it's you're in the big boy shoes. You're the top dog at one of the most prestigious football universities that Canada has. A lot of people starving for a winning season, not just the playoffs, but a winning season again. And they're going to be looking to you. And now certainly there's going to be, you know, let's see how we can roll this out, whatever. But if there's a lot of the same things that have been happening, I'm just saying, Coach Soria, happy for him. Very, very happy to see him in that head coaching position. There's a lot of players out there that he has previously coached that reached out and said, we're so happy to see him where he is. But don't think that that takes off any of the hype that's there, the pressure that's there, because this means something. Guelph Griffins should be vying for Yates Cups each and every single year, and they haven't been, and people are upset because of that. So lots of pressure that's here. I think Coach Soria can handle it, but it means something.
Amen. And honestly, it takes me back to the you know, Mac Windsor week one with you, and just hearing you and some of your boys talk about some of the, you know, turmoil at Mac, right? And Guelph certainly historically doesn't have that type of prestige, but over the past decade they've really built that up with some incredible runs and recruiting classes and people that have come into the coaching fold, you know, and with respect as well to Coach Sheehan, just it, worth noting, and once again you're the one seeing these comments, a lot of people, I don't know if in equal footing, greater footing on one hand or the other, a lot of people as well coming out in support of him coming back to Calgary.
Certainly.
And looking at the track record. So in fairness as well, that a lot of people are looking at the positives. And hey, like if you look at some of the names he's been around and teams he's been a part of, like you can certainly make that case. You know, it's one person's, or it's, you know, to each their own, I suppose. And to Coach Soria's time with U of T, I think Tommy Dennison might want to have a word about just who was calling up plays for Clay Sequeira and the Bird Gang there. Okay, let's move on. Speaking of, how about this? Speaking of Tommy Dennison, let's talk about the York Lions. Let's talk about U of T, Toronto football in general, mm-hmm. I should say, because both teams now, of course, in need of a head coach. Obviously, you had set up, or we broke the news, if you will. I think it was in our Vanier preview, which, you know, in hindsight, like, no, I think I made a point of saying how much that kind of ticked me off, that when we were setting up Montreal versus UBC, we had to make a point of talking about that they had officially started their search for a head coach. And of course, if you need a reminder, last year they were rocking the assistant head coach setup of Nathaniel Griffith and Brian Jones, who also respectively took on OC and special teams coordinator duties. And with U of T, it had been Coach Greg Marshall or Greg Blue Marshall, as I know our friend Nate Hobbs likes to refer to him as, and he had been there for quite some time. I don't know if you know, I have the number in front of you, but you know, we have right here now
seven years. He had been there 7 years.
7 years. Okay. So, you know, kind of just epitomizes this state of Toronto football, which, you know, having been back in Toronto football now for about 3-4 months, it's nice to sort of see the people that are putting the work in to help grow back a lot of the programs here at the grassroots level, and I'm very excited for what's coming with Toronto football, because, you know, I want to get to a point where I'm saying as proudly as you are about your new home, your current hometown in Hamilton, that like it is something to be feared about, because I know that when Toronto football is at its best, we can certainly compete with the best of them. And I think everyone in the province also knows that. So, you know, be afraid. But, you know, this kind of epitomizes the state, at least from the OUA standpoint, that we've had for a few years with these programs, with U of T and York now, of course, missing the vision. I'm not sure where you want to start with this. The one thing I want to throw out as well, just to perhaps get the ball rolling or just as a reminder, is that, you know, with York, we also had that rumor that became reality of one Mark Tressman getting involved with their program. I don't know if it was with York Athletics in general or if it was in some, I forget if it was like a consultant role with the football team in specific. Not that I think he's all of a sudden going to become the head coach of the York Lions. Like that would seem like such an odd turn for a guy that was one of the storied head coaches of a generation of CFL football, spent some time in the NFL to then take over the York Lions, except I'm kind of really here for that. But just as another little oddity of you know the past year for York Lions football, but Toronto football in need of head coaches in both schools. What are some of your thoughts off the jump?
Well, it's very interesting. I had put out a poll on Twitter saying which current head coaching vacancy would be most appealing to you. Obviously, U of T and York, but McGill is also a part of that as well. Those are the three across Canada right now. Calgary obviously having theirs filled, and 138 votes. I was surprised at how much it was kind of split a little bit, but overwhelmingly 53% people saying U of T. Now, when you think of U of T football, this history, the story that's there, you and I have talked about it so much as well. Playing downtown in the heart of downtown Toronto, the football stadium right there is the coolest friggin' thing in the world, even if traffic might be a nightmare to try to get in and out of there. But still, it's such an awesome feel to be a part of that. Having the university kind of spread out within downtown Toronto as well, making you just kind of feel like you're a part of it, is just so it's so awesome. Now, the one thing that I will say, and people obviously had a lot of things to say about U of T football and wanting to like that being the number one choice. U of T is also one of, if not the most prestigious school in the world. And the entry level to get in there reflects that. And I've spoken to former U of T coaches before, and that university is very adamant about, you know, where we are because of a specific reason, because we hold our people to such a high standard. It is a prestigious thing to be able to say, I went to U of T. You do not get any real support academically, at least to help get kids into U of T if you're playing a sport. So that adds in a completely other realm, because it is very difficult, as you and I both know, to maintain a really awesome working standard between playing and practicing with football, training and everything that goes on with that, and then also to being a full-time student. And whether that's in high school, whether it's in university, those are very big things to kind of get over here. And something that I think is really relevant here, you have to make sure that you have a certain level. Like I think the bare minimum for kids to get in like an arts program would be like an 88%. And so that also limits a lot of the recruiting pool that you're able to pull from and getting people back to form with U of T and everything else. So something to be noted, certainly, but I think the support, once you have the academics, I think from what I can tell, the support is there. You're part of such an incredible university. You have the atmosphere, you have the history, you have everything along with that. So if you can make it work, U of T is an unbelievable place to go. But the academics, I felt, needed to be said here.
Yeah, no doubt. And I want to take that as an opportunity to give a shout out to a guy that was on the pod when we did the talk season two in Jackson Mayer from Saunders Secondary in London, played defensive liner. I think he's still probably might still be playing at U of T after this year. I don't know. Maybe he's draft eligible. But as we came on the pod talking about sort of a project he was working on, sort of compiling mental health resources for his teammates at U of T, because school-wide they've had some issues. I mean, so a lot of schools across the province have had a lot of issues with mental health, but specifically when you add in the sports, the academics, and in specific the academics of U of T. Yeah, anyways, shout out to Jackson Mayer. So U of T, top on the poll there. And like, despite that fact, I'm still in agreement, because another piece that is so interesting to have as part of this conversation that was very fascinating. We got to talk to a few people when we were in Kingston about when we were there for the Vanier, is of course Quebec's new rules on non-French speaker tuition, or however they're framing it, because a quick Google search will tell you that as of 2022, at least, 47% of McGill is comprised of native English speakers, who are now all of a sudden going to have to pay an additional, is it $7,000 is it?
Yeah, I've got the note here. Quebec's Minister of Higher Education, Pascal Derry, announced changes last Wednesday that will see tuition for non-Quebec resident students rise to $12,000, which is a 33% more than what out-of-province students currently pay.
Yikes. Some of the conversations we had, not to turn this into a complete Quebec podcast, though there's so much to dissect on that front. You know, you look at the Montreals and the Lavals, at the end of the day, they're not going to be affected by it. It is schools like McGill, like Concordia, like Bishops, Bishops thought they got away with a fast one, saying, you know what, we're getting the heck out of the RSEQ, we're playing AUS football. Quebec said, not so fast, mon ami. So it's really those schools that are already at, and I don't know really where Sherbrooke stands in that. I feel like they're probably slightly more on the Francophone side, but I don't know. I really don't know entirely. So as far as the coaching vacancy, if that spot with the Redbirds is still available, is certainly a consideration. Like, you almost think that the head coach, you kind of think you want a Francophone head coach, because if you are going to, how do I want to say this? If it's in your favor, then to recruit French athletes, or if you know that you're at a disadvantage, I'll say, if you're at a disadvantage recruiting Anglophone or non-Quebec athletes, then you certainly probably want to have someone, the same way that when I'm forgetting the coach's name, but JF came into Guelph and it really unlocked their ability to recruit in Quebec. It's like, yeah, you have someone from their, you know, that province. It helps bring students out of the province. So similarly, anyways, that's a whole conversation. I know some people have been interested in that. So, I mean, we can certainly keep that ball rolling as well. So U of T, for all the reasons you said, being leading the polls and in agreement, the McGill piece, I think, with this tuition hike, or however they're framing it, certainly is doing them no favors. And then, of course, and then there's York. But like, I'll let you speak on McGill, too.
Yeah, just one kind of final thing, and it was detailed as well in one of the comments that we had here. But like, you look at McGill, who also has the same kind of level of prestige that Toronto does in terms of the academics and everything else, and it's one of the best schools in the world, really. And so you have that as well. But then the other side of things here, obviously, the talent in the OUA is through the roof, and what we've kind of been seeing here. And you and I are obviously huge proponents of the OUA in general, so we've been preaching that since day one at how damn good all of these teams are. So it's always difficult to play in that, but when you have McGill now with the academics that they already had in terms of, you know, you need to be damn smart to get into McGill, now the tuition hike for anybody outside of Quebec, and then also playing arguably two of the best teams in Canada year after year in Montreal and in Laval, that's a damn hard challenge for anybody to kind of get through here. Now, obviously, Concordia, we saw something there. They beat Montreal in the last game of the regular season last year, and that was insane. Montreal and eventual Vanier Cup champs, whatever. So I'm not saying that it's impossible by any means, but it's been a damn long time since any team other than Laval or Montreal has played in the Dunsmore Cup. So maybe that's not the level of expectation that you're holding your football team to. Maybe there's a different way that you kind of measure what is success to you. But Ronald Hallaire, who was the head coach for the McGill Redbirds, for past 10 years, I want to say, obviously held his team to a high standard and as best as he can had a losing season for the majority of it, but like we said, once again, with all of the different factors and now something else kind of coming into the play, I'd be interested to see what McGill is really going for with this head coaching change. What you detailed makes a ton of sense to have, once again, another Francophone real influence here to try to keep as many French or at least Quebec residents at McGill playing football, because it's just a lot easier of a conversation than trying to pull anybody else from an outside of the province. But really interested to see what comes through with McGill. But we've got another Toronto team that I'm sure you're itching to talk about as well.
Itching, lightly scratching at, I don't know if the conversation's really changed. Okay, so we're having this in the context of, and actually, do you have the complete numbers in front of you as well? You obviously highlighted U of T with the majority share of those votes as far as the most appealing job. Where did McGill and the New York land respectively on that?
Yeah, I was surprised at this. Like I said, so U of T, the number one at 53%, McGill the next at 25%, and York with 22%. That was a lot higher than I had certainly thought of them. But I do want to give a shout out as well to Carlos Verde, who tweeted us as well at Carlos77 Verde. Blues, hands down, fairly low bar to be a playoff team in the conference, not working with an exceptionally smaller budget than anyone else, in brackets York, or facing powerhouse teams every second or third week, in brackets McGill. What are your thoughts with that?
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I think in some ways there's a similar argument to then just may be made about York. I mean, I think we had this conversation, I think, with Jack Moore. I know you and I have had this, but you talk about the bar being low at U of T and like the chances of being like a frisky playoff team. Like, you win two games at York, they're carrying you off the field, And we talk about nice facilities. That stadium rocks out there. I interviewed Warren Craney going back just about 2 years. And one of the biggest things, it was kind of, as a Toronto kid, it was like, it's a fun thing to talk about, but it's like majorly important too, is the fact that the subway line now extends to York University. That's huge. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't, like, York is fringe, like, out of Toronto. Like, it is at Steeles. Like, that is like, when people say like, oh, I'm from Toronto, it's like, where are you from? It's like, if they are north of Steeles, that's where like you're starting to say like, all right, like,
that's like North York.
Take it easy. Yeah, we're getting into Markham territory or like Vaughan, so like they are, it's pretty far north. And you mentioned the whole like the traffic and the congestion. I know that you were, of course, referencing the lovely time we had watching my Ottawa Gigi's beat the U of T Blues in week two, I believe that was, on Labor Day, and the like 2 hour trip you had in from Hamilton. So, but all that to say, in many ways, you have a lot of the same appeals at York. The question kind of becomes like, I don't even know. Like, there's still that Mark Trestman piece, which I don't really know what his capacity is and what his role is that he's playing. And then secondly, where do you even start with this? Like, as a quick aside, and not to make like a kind of dark parallel, I happened to catch like the second half of We Are Marshall on TV the other day. And like, I'm watching it and they're talking about like how hard it is to run a program at the best of times, let alone in the worst circumstances, and just like building like almost literally from scratch. And part of me is like, how many dudes are on York's roster right now? I do not know. I do not know.
I think it's going to take somebody who is certainly somebody who really understands football and understands what it takes to build a team here. I think it's going to take going up to the athletic director there. I think that's Alex Dominato. I believe that's who that is at York. Anyways, going up to whoever your boss is, or even in the interview process, and saying, listen, if you want to be competitive with the rest of the OUA, which is damn competitive, you need to support the program like this. There needs to be X amount of dollars for recruiting. There needs to be X amount of dollars for swag or for whatever else. Like, I think you need to go to them and say, this is what I need from you in terms of support. And then if all of those are checked off, then yes, I will be the head football coach here. I don't think York right now is in a position to sit back as a university and say, oh, look at all of the amazing coaches that we're going to kind of get to come in here. We've got a chance to pick some of the best here. I think at your best case, this is a hard sell with how everything has been going here and how see, Warren Craney was as the head coach for what, 12 years? And his best record was 4-4. There was a lot of things that went into that that kind of made York as like a, well, I don't know if I want to be a part of a program like that, or I don't know how they're running things or whatever else. And then even this past year, you announced like the week before training camp starts that you're going to have a two head coach system here. And it's just very clear to all of us that you're not putting in the proper time and energy in order to invest into your own football program to see it do well. So immediately, you're now starting to shorten the list of the high respectable people as a head coach who are going to want to come into this role and want to try to turn this around because they don't know what that support looks like. So I think as the athletic program here, whether that's the athletic director or whoever, I think you have to go out and say, these are my top five, top three, whatever coaches that I want to be a part of this program. And it needs to be a conversation now rather than an actual interview process. Like this needs to be how, like, what is your regiment like as a coach for sure? What does your support look like as a university? How are you going to make sure that these kids and this coaching staff isn't put into a position to be successful week after week, year after year? Because you can't just put somebody in here and say, go and win us games because we're not going to give you any money. Like you need to have that support, whether it's through academic support, whether it's through whatever. And a lot of times that looks like dollars and cents. So what does that look like? How much is that university willing to pony up and to help out the program? That is directly going to tie into who they can get as a head coach.
And in some regards, if the university is willing to, be reasonable from that standpoint, and I think given the lack of leverage they have, that really is the only point they do have to kind of incentivize someone to come in is by saying like you tell us what you need to run this ship. And you mentioned the Warren Craney piece, like ostensibly, you could kind of like the job security one might think they have in that role, and just the ability to build a program in a way that you might not have the option to do so anywhere else. One of the last things I kind of want to mention just sort of in this whole conversation, I don't know if there was any big pieces that we were missing as far as the things we wanted to sort of cover, but maybe the next two names I kind of want to bring up will stoke the fire a little bit. We've kind of talked about, we've mentioned Warren Craney's name, Greg Marshall from U of T, even mentioning like Joe DeMore's name as kind of head coaches of kind of a certain generation that are all, I don't know if they're actively still kind of interested in the coaching game, but then sort of on a different generation of coaches and going back to talking about Queens a little bit, as we mentioned with Todd Galloway, like he's the type of guy where like you could see making a jump to a head coaching position if he's going to go anywhere, right? At Queens, you have two guys in Tom Flaxman and Ryan Beckmanis that I wonder when is the clock due, if that is their goal. Because I'm sure for some people out there, like Beckmanis could just be saying like, hey, I am the defensive coordinator of the Queens Golden Gaels football team, and that's all I want to do, and more power to him if that's it. Tom Flaxman might be the same thing. But there are certain names out there, and I'll start with just those two kind of thinking about Queens in general, where you wonder, like, is there a point where when are we starting to see that next crop of OCs, DCs, special teams coordinators, even offensive line coaches, as we've obviously seen thinking about guys like, Cercelli and Bertoia. Like, when's that next crop of guys seeing? Because we're seeing, as we kind of allude to some conversations we were having, some lateral moves. Obviously, Soria becoming a head coach is a form of that. Who are some of the next guys? I'll throw out Beckmanis and Flaxman and just sort of see where that takes us in the conversation.
Most definitely. I think Beckmanis and Flax are two guys who are certainly, they should be at some of the higher echelons in terms of who you're thinking about. One of the names that kind of pops up for me is Scott Brady. defensive coordinator for McMaster. Yeah. He has head coaching experience at Mount Allison. The guys at McMaster absolutely love this man. He's got such a positive atmosphere in that university. You can tell.
Great bald head.
Yes, another great bald head. But yeah, like the kids love him. He's obviously brought such a positivity to that program once again. And, you know, you and I talked about it. The big focal point, a lot of the positivity on that McMaster team was the defense, and not only in their great play and their great whatever, but the resiliency. How many times did, you know, the offense turn the ball over, whether it's a fumble or it's an interception directly after the defense came up with a stop, and then the defense goes back out there and stops them again? The whole reason that they were so close in a lot of these games was because of that defense.
Which we found out after the season, some of those defensive players weren't too happy about. So spot on job by Coach Brady to keep those voices in check, at least for the duration of the season. Because, there were some interesting comments made in the shortly after the season ended from some of those defensive players. That's a great name, though. That's a great name, Scott Brady. Yeah. And, you know, you think about even like Coach Snyder at Queens, like having that reputation of being out east, coming back and obviously going to Western for a bit, you know, a storied program in the OUA before then getting a shot at a program. So like, how many years is it now for Brady at Mac? Has it been since Knox left? I don't actually know the full timeline there.
Yeah, it was since Knox left. So I believe he came in at 20. I think he was there 2019 with that Yates Cup season. I believe so. I'd have to double check that one. But yeah, like once again, you talk about a head coaching, not only having head coaching experience, but also being successful in the OUA, being a part of championship winning teams. Because once again, and I think this is something that you and I have kind of talked about, I don't know if we've directly outright said on the podcast or not, but there is something to be said about having a coach that understands what it's like to win. Not just knowing, okay, you got to work hard, you got to do whatever, but understanding when you win championships, this is what you practice like. This is how you conduct yourself. This is what the level of expectations that I hold, not only to my players, but to my coaches as well. You know, playing on those McMaster teams when we had so much success and understanding, guys, this is the level. This is what we expect. And that's not only set from your coaches, but that's set from your senior players. You know, guys like Kyle Quinlan for me, Matt Sewell, Jason Medeiros, these guys who are unbelievable players and who eventually would have some experience, whether that's in coaching themselves or in the CFL, can kind of come into a rookie player and say, guys, this is what the expectation is here. This is how we're going to conduct ourselves at McMaster. And that informs the next generation of kids and players. And that comes from your coaching staff. Certainly, you saw something similar with Stu Lang and with the unbelievable, and not just Stu Lang, but Mike McDonald and all of these amazing coaches that Guelph has had over the years. And you set that level of precedence in terms of this is how championship teams practice and how they play. If you don't have that level of experience at some regard, even you don't have to be a player to be a part of it, if you're a coach who won or whatever, but if you don't have that championship experience and understanding this is what that looked like, I think that's a big detriment to you, quite honestly, if that's something you want to get to, which obviously everybody should. So I think that's got to be another piece that adds into this as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And now I'm thinking as well of like a guy like, you know, one of my faves, Coach Belfay, right? And just like,
yeah, man,
the consistency that they've had there, even when they've had their ups and downs through injuries or just like minor talent droughts here and there with that team, just that consistency, that steadiness. And we can go back to the Mac coaching tree and think about how impressed we've been in Corey Grant's short tenure now with Carleton, and what it looks like he's building there. And then, of course, like the whole Greg Marshall coaching tree and what the Cercelli family is doing out in Windsor. The only thing I can think of perhaps with, you know, thinking of Windsor perhaps is that, on that conversation of say like you know, offensive line coaches making the jump. Obviously, Coach Beardy's been there with Windsor for a couple years. Like, is he looking to make a jump? Like, he's Windsor through and through, so I don't see that happening for them. Their DC and Patrick Donovan, I think he's been there for a few years, and obviously they've had some pretty stellar defenses, to say the least, at Windsor as well. So just as far as, like, naming names again, who are, you know, some of the people behind the scenes, if you will, that we don't always do the best job of shouting out as far as why some of these teams do so well, not just like for 1 year, but year after year. Some of these people that really, you know, in these coordinator roles, are really kind of the lifeblood of so many of these teams that we've come to love and cheer for and support over the years. You know, I had on my list here York, UFT, McGill, Calgary, Guelph, and just a list of names that we've all now kind of gone through. Tom, you know, what do we got left here? Anything else we need to squeeze out of this one, or have we touched on it all?
No, I think we've kind of covered everything off from a coaching standpoint here. We're obviously for some off-season content, because we're finally going to get some of that to you, we're going to be doing deep dives into each and every individual team and devoting an entire podcast to these teams. So we'll dive deeper into the York Lions, into the U of T Blues, into all of that. And we're also going to have some also talk around just Toronto football in general with a potential very special guest as well. So we've got a lot of fires cooking from that regard, which I'm very, very excited about. But yeah, I think that, like, once again, I think even just with us, with our passion for covering football, with our passion for just watching things and talking to players and getting some sense of what those locker rooms kind of look like, it's no secret who these potential up-and-coming head coaches could be. You know, you're Todd Galloway. Todd Galloway should be the number one sought-after head coach, potential head coach, in my opinion, out there. Like, the dude has the track record. He's got all of the former players, yourself included, who are just so happy for the guy and would want to see him succeed in that regard. I think, obviously, we talked about Scott Brady, Tom Flaxman, Ryan McManus. There's so many other guys that are out there that have that experience. Not to mention Darnell Adams, who was one of the names who was rumored to be right at the cusp of signing that deal and becoming the York Lions. You know, I don't know how much validity there is to that, whatever, but that was certainly what people had been talking about a lot of. So I don't think, like I said, I don't think this is a shock or surprise of all of the amazing coaches that are out there. I think it's up to York to say, how much are you willing to pay this man? How much are you willing to devote into this program? And that is directly going to see if you can get a top tier like the names that we've mentioned, or if you got to try and go with a little a lesser known person at the very least and hope that you get a JP Cercelli miracle in that regard. Not to say that he was lesser known, but you understand what I'm saying. Coming from that offensive line coach at Western, and seeing if that's going to be the difference in here. So really interested to see where York kind of comes from out of this. Certainly not, I think of all of the head coaching vacancies, the York Lions would have the least amount of pressure in terms of where we expect you to be. So that could be a positive or a negative, depending on how you want to look at that. But there's a lot of work that needs to go into that York Lions team. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, one of the stipulations is cleaning house, whether that's from the players or from the coaches, or, you know, just getting everybody else in there or whatever that looks like. But obviously what's been going on in Toronto football, well, not Toronto football, with York football in particular, has not been up to the standard of anybody really. And so culture needs to change. People need to change. There's a lot of stuff that needs to go into that.
Well, hey, it can only go up from where it's been. So let's, I can't wait to be on this pod with you, which no doubt I will when that day does come, though we may be gray in the beard when it does. Hey, so many of you, no doubt, were getting your Spotify Wrapped the last couple of weeks. We also were getting a Spotify Wrap. They send them out to creators as well as consumers. And so I don't have the numbers in front of me. Not that it's of, oh, Tom has them there. Yeah, Tom, just go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple of things for us. 2,300 minutes created by us this year. So that's something to put up. Plus 67% in the actual streams that we did. So obviously we were pumping them out. Top country in Canada, But we had 155 top fans. That means we were the number one podcast for 155 people. And my God, is that such a cool thing to be able to say? You know, we talked about it before. We talked about it about our experience at the Vanier Cup and talking to so many people, the amazing Queens coaching staffs that were there and all of the other fans that were there as well. But just thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to us. Thank you for allowing two people who are a little bit insane about OUA and CIS football, or U Sports football, I should say, just to allow us a venue to talk about and to hear all of your feedback and people who actually want to listen to us. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you for tuning in.
25,000 listens in a year is a pretty cool number to see.
Damn straight.
Yeah. So, hey, as Tom set up, we have our more formal off-season content coming up. Much like with this pod, if things are kind of happening, not unprecedentedly, because some of these moves weren't necessarily shocks per se, but of course we'll be here to cover it. And as long as you are all keeping us attuned to what you're interested in, which you always do such a great job of, and Tom does such a phenomenal job of staying tuned to all those things, we'll obviously be here to speak on all those things. You might love it, you might hate it, but let us know what you think. Nonetheless, you know where to find us. So we don't have the full content schedule planned out just as of yet, but you will be certain. You can be certain, I should say, to hear from us very soon, right here at 55.